Welcome to Still Scared Talking Children's Horror, a podcast about creepy, spooky, and disturbing children's books, films, and TV. I'm Ren Wednesday, my co-host is Adam Wybray, and today we're talking about the Australian TV series Round the Twist. A full transcript of this episode will be available, so check the show notes for that. Enjoy! Good morning, Adam. Have you ever felt like this?
What, slightly sleepy and beleaguered?
Yeah.
loads of times, Ray.
Oh, okay.
Most mornings.
So yeah, we're talking about Round the Twist today, which... It's an Australian children's fantasy TV show. It's like four series that were aired between 1989 and 2001.
With quite a big gap between season two and season three.
Yeah. And it felt like it was on CBBC really for most of my childhood. Which is probably not true, but it feels like it was around a lot.
Yeah, I certainly remember rewatching, like, the spaghetti episode. I feel like I watched countless times.
Mm. Oh, God, yeah.
So I don't know about you, but I have quite a complex relationship with Round the Twist, I think, because I was fascinated by it and did like it, but I guess being a kid with OCD, it has a lot of gross out humour.
Yeah.
Like, there's a surprising number of plots focused around weeing.
Yeah, no, my friend Jim came into the room last night and said, "Oh, I'm watching Round the Twist." And he was like, "Oh, have you got to the episode with the weeing?" And I was like, which one? Yeah.
And presumably they meant the weeing over the wall, in which young Bronson enters into a competition to wee the highest, and ends up with some kind of superpower that allows him to wee all the way over a wall.
Yes, he did mean that one. But there is also the episode where Pete wees on a tree and becomes impregnated by a tree spirit. So
that's true. I mean, there's the one when the little fish jumps all the way up into Bronson's penis, which thus acts as a propeller, giving him amazing swimming powers.
That is a genuine plot. Yeah, that happened. That happened. You think you hallucinated it, but no, it happened on Round the Twist.
Yeah, many things happen in Round the Twist.
The plot is follows the Twist family, which is teenage twins Pete and Linda and their 7-year-old brother Bronson and their dad Tony. And in the first episode, they move to the fictional town of Port Noranda to live in a lighthouse. And it's kind of, I think it's known for, one, having a really good theme tune, and to sort of, yeah, as we mentioned, kind of pushing the boundaries of acceptability for a children's TV show.
So, yeah, this first episode, Skeleton on the Dunny, is pretty scatological from the go-get. So, as the title implies, is about it. So this lighthouse only has an outhouse for a toilet, so they all have to go across in the middle of the night if they want to use the bog. And it turns out that it's a haunted dunny, thus giving rise to quite a lot of scatological humour. The worst and most contrived of which is their oldest brother, Pete, has a false tooth, which he has to wear when he goes to the toilet, apparently, which was quite, I don't quite understand the connection there, but anyway, he goes to the toilet and his false tooth somehow falls out into the toilet, which then prompts the kids to go on a sort of little trip to the sewerage rendering plant, whereupon a tray is brought out of shit. And Pete retrieves his shitty tooth, which then he boils in some water and pops back into his mouth.
Oh, how lovely.
And as my sister pointed out, why did it have to be a tooth? It could have been a ring.
Yeah.
It could have been all manner of small objects, but no.
No. It has to be the one adjacent to his mouth.
Yeah. Another good Phoebe observation was that in the car at the start, they're singing Twist and Shake by the Beatles.
Twist and Shout.
Shout. Yeah, good shout. And she pointed out, are they singing this because it's called Round the Twist?
It's because it's their name.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, well, I mean, yeah, but what family sings songs based around their own name? I don't sing songs with the name Y-Bray in them.
Those many songs, yeah.
Yeah, all the songs about the questioning horses.
Yeah, so I think we have Paul Jennings to thank for these strange and scatological plots, at least for the first two series.
Did you read any of the Paul Jennings books?
I didn't really. I think I read one of them, because I remember reading the one about the boy whose hands are covered in nails, like scales of nails, which I think is also a Round the Twist episode.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I was put off by the covers.
Oh, yeah. So when we were young... Do you mean the double covers?
Yeah, I think so.
So the way the covers worked when we were young, like, yeah, I used to sort of... I don't know if it was published by Scholastic, but I sort of remember, you know, a lot of these books in the library or the library van that would go round, or book fairs at school. Mm-hmm. And the covers were doubled. So basically, the front cover would look like, you know... normally it was like just some teenage kid, possibly with something a bit odd going on, like, you know, maybe like looking down in surprise at the nail on their hand. And then the front cover had holes for the eyes. So the eyes were looking through from the cover beneath it, which was creepy enough. And then you'd lift the first cover and beneath there'd be some kind of horrific transformation. So the boy covered with nails. So the first episode we're really going to talk about is Santa Claus. And I definitely read that one as a kid. And So the front covers this boy, and then you open it up, and then his mouth is really shrunken and tiny underneath.
See, I couldn't quite remember what I found disturbing about the covers, but yeah, I think it was that double thing.
Now, I think the Santa Claus episode, I mean, it captures moments of the griminess of the original story. So that's one thing that stays in my mind about reading Jennings when I was young, that they had this sort of suburban griminess.
Uh-huh.
They're always quite sort of grotty and grubby. Like, a lot of the locations, you know, always seem quite sort of run down. And, the characters, I don't know, like, it often seemed like these sort of young teenage protagonists would sort of meet these slightly disreputable or outcast figures, you know. And the Santa Claus of Santa Claus is one such figure.
Yeah, he's memorably grimy and dishevelled.
And you know it's a weird episode around the twist when the whole thing is positioned as being a dream.
Yeah, this is too outlandish even for Round the Twist. So it has this slightly confusing structure where Pete falls asleep in front of the fire on Christmas Eve, and then he sort of dreams that he's telling the story to I've forgotten her name, Linda's friend, in the playground.
Yeah.
And he's had his mouth shrunk to a tiny hole, and he's telling the story of how this happened to him.
In his now high-pitched voice, which I don't think... I mean, if I purse my lips together, my voice doesn't suddenly go high-pitched. It might be a slightly whistling voice, maybe, but... I don't quite understand why having a small mouth suddenly means your voice is really high. But anyway, that's probably not the most ludicrous aspect of the story. The story is all based around Pete's cynical teenage lack of belief in Santa.
Yes. So Bronson's really excited about going to the school fete to see Santa Claus, and Pete's all like, oh, do you still believe in that sort of thing, and Linda's telling him not to be a dick, but they go to the fete, and Pete goes outside, and he sees a kind of procession of toys falling off the roof. I really like that sequence. They just sort of tumble down into his arms. He catches them.
Has that kind of sort of phantasmagoric pop surrealism of Paper House that we talked about a few months back.
Yeah, isn't it? Very creepily atmospheric. He catches them, and a man claiming to be one of the real Santas comes down. Because there's, I don't know, he's Santa number 1058 or something. He's very dirty and dishevelled. He has these long pointed fingernails. And he says he's Santa Claus. And Claus.
Yeah, he looks a bit like, have you seen Mulholland Drive?
Not in a long time.
There's a bit where there's a sort of particularly dishevelled homeless person, possible creature, around the back of a diner. He looks quite a lot like them.
And he says that, he sort of implies that Santa Clauses are like a species. Because he says they've evolved. They've evolved claws from scrabbling up chimneys. he tells Pete that he has to give him and all his family two wishes, because he helped a registered Santa Claus. And Pete's like, yeah, whatever.
And then Pete's, yeah.
And so he sort of follows Pete around. And he ends up having an altercation with the Santa at the fate, who is Nell. Okay, I love Nell so much.
I should have guessed you'd love Nell, actually, yeah.
slight digression about how much I love Nell. Nell is the neighbour, sort of lives in a nearby cottage, played by Bonnie Brooke, and she just has this, like, great, like, slightly grizzled older butch aesthetic, including permanent lighthousekeeper's hat, which is just such a strong look. I love it. Her brother was the last lighthousekeeper, and her parents and sister all died in a shipwreck. And she sort of turns up to give advice and warnings and, I don't know, magic and lighthouse lore.
Yeah, generally filling them in on the lore and folk stories of the surrounding area in Port Marion.
Yeah. But she's Santa Claus.
And as the real, one of the real Santa Clauses calls her, she's a pillow belly, which I thought was a great name for fake Santas.
Yeah, so they have a kind of scrap on stage, in which I'm pretty sure she headbutts him in the bollocks. The real Santa gets expelled from the building. But he
after
follows...
performing a beautiful operatic.
Oh yeah.
Quite bizarrely, because it's a fairly long sequence.
Yeah, he sings the whole first verse of Silent Night.
Very beautifully, which is sort of dubbed over the actor's real voice.
Yeah. 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 He follows Pete home to the lighthouse so that he can give out his wishes, which he eventually manages to do. I think Tony takes him up on it first. And asked to be whisked away from here by a beautiful someone, and his girlfriend Faye turns up, and then his second wish is something naughty whispered in the ear.
Of, yeah, I've written ominous sex wish.
Ominous sex wish, yes.
Well, just because the Santa like raises his eyebrows, is like, oh, you old dog.
Yeah.
All right, it's a bit unwholesome.
Yeah, quite. So their dad leaves, leaves them to their wishes. Bronson wishes to be bigger than Pete and becomes very big, and then, in traditional wish progression, then has to use his second wish to wish to be his normal size again.
Oh, he didn't think it through.
He didn't think it through. Pete wishes that he could see this, like, pop star that he has a crush on in person. So she's whisked out of the telly into their living room. She seems quite confused and frightened.
Well, it's quite confusing because she's whisked out of a music video, seemingly, rather than a live performance. So, is this like her in the past, whisked into the future? Has this replicated her? Like,
yeah.
Because presumably this is pre-recorded. I probably overthought this, but I found it quite confusing.
Yeah.
I was really thinking about those metaphysical implications, you know.
Yeah. He also has to use his
I've clearly been working too much
back.
On my academic book. Like, I just...
And then Linda's... That's okay. And then Linda wishes for Santa Claus to go away. And she does. But little does she know, she forgets that she still has a second wish. And then Pete like blurts out to Bronson that the Santa Claus at the faint was actually Nell. And Linda says, "I wish you didn't have such a big mouth." And that's Pete's mouth shrinks very horrifically.
So the whole episode's basically one long Shaggy Dog story.
Yeah, yeah.
To get to this bad joke at the end.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
One detail that the episode doesn't have, which I remember from the original story, which I thought was a shame not to include, was that the main character of the story, or Pete in the episode, now has to subsist on peas alone because they're the only food he can fit through his mouth at a time.
One detail that I liked was that when Pete's going into school and he's trying to hide from the bullies so they don't... Because he's wearing a bandana over his tiny mouth. But, like, Linda and Bronson distract the bullies with, like, a lovely fluffy bunny.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that was cute.
That's where they're all distracted by stroking this cute bunny.
So we followed up with possibly an even stranger episode.
Yeah.
Which is Know-All, right?
Yeah.
Although this is episode 10, so at this point all the characters seem to be quite accepting of the strangeness of the lighthouse. Like, considering that this is an episode where they're possessed by old Victorian clothes from a circus, they all seem to just get on with it, really.
Yeah, so they drag this barnacled old chest ashore, find that it's filled with old circus costumes. Nell turns up as the voice of reason and goes, "Oh, they were all drowned in a shipwreck. You probably shouldn't mess around with those." But they're like,
"Nah, we love wearing dead people's clothes, mate." Yeah. We're the twists. We're wacky. It's what we're all about.
So, yeah, they waste no time. They're just straight dressing up in...
Straight on with them, yeah.
Dressing up in haunted circus clothes. And they also, for good measure, dress up the scarecrow as a clown.
Yeah, so this is probably the only episode of a children's TV show or anything to create the hellish combo of scarecrow clown. I mean, Wurzel Gummidge maybe came close, but you know.
Yeah, they're really going for the double here with a violent clown and an animated scarecrow in one.
Two childhood traumas for the price of one. It's pretty damn awful. Like, I won't lie, I genuinely found this one quite scary even now.
Yeah, I mean, he has this piercing maniacal laugh. which is unsettling. And there's this kind of big bristly straw moustache. He's kind of still part straw, but with a human face, but with clown makeup. Oh my god. Yeah.
It's pretty awful. And there's a bit, so he pursues Linda, so Linda's dressed up in the clothes of a woman who was a clown. Mm. And so this is the lost love of the clown. And so he's pursuing her, sort of like, you know, it sort of filmed like a slasher film or something. Like, one good thing about The Lighthouse is it really does allow for some nice kind of claustrophobic cinematography. But yeah, there's a bit where he jumps through the door window. So the door to the lighthouse is a little sort of porthole style window. And the scarecrow just leaps straight through it. I think I swore out loud. I was like, what? No.
Yeah. I think he's not carrying a knife, but you just kind of feel like he is.
Well, there was a bit where he smashes a piece of broken door. And it turns out just to give himself a skateboard, Lord of the Rings style, to surf down the stairs.
Oh, yeah. To...
But when he did that, I thought, oh, my, he's making a mistake to stab Linda with.
Yeah. It also sort of anticipates the Weeping Angels from Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
In this scene where Linda thinks she sees him moving and then she sort of turns away and then he's moved a bit more.
There's a great kind of creepy synthesized fairground music this episode.
Oh, yeah.
So a really kind of 80s Residents style, basically, which I really enjoyed. Yeah. I might just download the episode as an MP3 and like edit together all the music so I can listen to it.
Nice.
But yeah, I found this the scariest episode easily out of all the ones we watched.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's resolved because Tony has taken on the role of the fortune teller as Madam Dad, as Bronson introduces him. he foresees a solution. So he's a kind of sculptor or sort of found items artist.
Yeah.
And he's made an artwork called Chain to Chores, which is a mannequin. Which is a mannequin, I don't know, with handcuffs or something, and he's lent that to his girlfriend.
There's a nice little discussion with Linda about whether it's feminist or misogynist, which I thought was quite decent.
Yeah. Linda's very much a Lisa Simpson character.
Yeah, she is actually, yeah.
In the early seasons, at least.
Well, sort of troubled Lisa Simpson. A Lisa Simpson the rest of the family are quite worried about.
I think that's also Lisa Simpson.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah. But, yeah, she's a sort of feminist and environmentalist, and it's kind of played quite broadly, as tended to happen in the 80s. Yeah, but... Tony has to go and get this mannequin back. And he ends up dressing the mannequin in the Lady Scarecrow's outfit that Linda was wearing. Are you there, Adam?
Yeah, sorry, no, I was listening.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, you're like, oh, Adam hasn't piped up to interrupt me with some kind of bad joke or digression. He must be gone.
Sorry. And the sort of the mannequin kind of fades into life, and I don't even know where do they put them both in the back of a truck.
Yeah, and then cart them off to the circus.
Oh yes, they take them to the circus. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Where they live for however long reanimated skeleton clowns live for.
Yeah.
So in terms of sort of shabby reanimated dead things, there's a good, very shabby looking dead fox in Granddad's Gifts from season 2.
Yeah, this is a really interesting episode. It's I liked it because it had a lot of Nell in it. So they start talking about this tree in the yard of the lighthouse. And Nell says, "Oh, my grandfather shot a fox and buried its innards under that tree." So, yeah, classic Nell interjection. And then sort of Linda has a dream. There's a dream about it, that the tree's growing lemons. It's a lemon tree, but it's never really born many lemons. But she dreams about it, and then in the morning, it's there's lemons on the tree, and there's the fox pelt that the granddad shot the fox to make this pelt for his wife, but she never liked it. But that turns up in a sort of secret cupboard in Linda's room. So there's a sort of a connection between the lemons on the tree and the fox pelt.
And the fox starts making these kind of mewing guinea pig like noises. It doesn't sound much like a fox to me. Although I guess you've probably got more fox experience than I have.
Well, I mean, it's probably good it doesn't sound like a fox, because
it would just be screaming.
Foxes sound like they're being murdered in the night. It should be. They sound like children being murdered in the night.
Yes, yeah, specifically.
So it's probably good they didn't go there.
And the fox wants lemons for its eyes.
Yeah, these fox gut lemons, which are...
lemons pretty... for the fox god.
So she sort of brings it offerings of lemons, and that kind of... The lemons contain the essence of the fox, and it sort of brings it back to life.
Yeah, there's some proper associative magical thinking in this episode.
It's great. But its eye, the fox's eyes have been replaced by like beads or glass eyes. And before she can get the last lemons to that contain the spirit of its eyes, the Gribble boys, the bullies, rip up the lemon tree and claiming that they're pruning, and destroy the lemons and the fox's eyes with them.
Oh yeah, so we haven't really talked about the Gribbles.
No, so Mr. Gribble is a local business tycoon.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And he wants to buy the lighthouse from Tony, to make something terrible with it, probably.
Which is the kind of through line of all four seasons, really.
Yeah, they're going to have to protect the lighthouse from Mr. Gribble. And his son and his son's cronies are the antagonists for the kids.
Yeah, and they're sort of crass bullies, basically.
Yeah.
Sort of doltish, kind of, you know, dunderheaded bullies.
Hmm. Yeah. And we haven't actually mentioned, but because there were such big gaps between the series, there's a lot of cast changeover in the show. So, like, the first series was 1989, the second was 92, and then the third and fourth went till the early 2000s. So, most of the kids change between series 1 and 2, and then again between 2 and 3. And then a lot of the adults recast between 2 and 3 as well. So just going through and watching sort of different episodes from different series is a little surreal.
And I'm amazed I never noticed as a child.
Yeah, me neither. I'd completely forgotten that they, if I ever noticed.
No, I mean, especially as all the Bronsons in particular look quite different.
Yeah, yeah. I
was trying to rank which performances were the best in each season, but then, you know, when you're dealing with child actors or near enough child actors, it started feeling a bit mean, so.
I think the third Pete is the one. I don't know, I feel like I remember that Pete the most.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, but the third and fourth series are not the best.
Well, the first two seasons are based on Jennings' books or stories, whereas the third and fourth aren't. I think the third season, I mean, to me, the third season started feeling a little bit more self-consciously weird and gross out, and then the episode, the fourth season I watched, felt like self-parody, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But so Grandad's Gifts, before we move on, is resolved by, I mean, do they find Nell's granddad's eyes?
Yeah, so Nell, and like, is comforting Linda, who's distraught, and says, oh, there's another lemon tree, you know, the small lemon tree over here. Why don't you try the lemons from that tree? And then there's like, oh, it won't work.
Well, the lemons look rubbish compared to the first ones. Like, they look all, you know, pockmarked and shriveled.
Yeah, they're not very promising lemons. But Nell's like, come on, do it for me. So Linda does. And then it works, and the fox opens its eyes. Well, she doesn't think it's worked, but then the fox, like, creeps out of the lighthouse. And it has these bright blue eyes. And it turns out that these are Nell's granddad's eyes.
Yeah. So Linda's trapped granddad's eyes in a fox for all eternity.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what you get for shooting foxes.
Yeah, I mean, that's some pretty Goosebumps X twist there.
I felt like this episode was the closest to get to kind of Aussie folk horror, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite fascinating. Very. Such a weird concept. Lemons containing the essence of fox.
Yeah, I'd God, it sounds like something you get at a fancy bistro now, you know. Lemons with fox essence. With shavings of granddad's eyes.
Ooh.
Well, that could be the texture of the week.
Yeah.
Should we do texture of the week?
Okay.
What's this?
Should we like try and sing the Round of Twist theme tune to texture of the week?
Okay. What?
Have you ever
textured like this?
This.
Strange textures happened.
On its texture of the week.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was extremely awkward, but I felt like we had to.
Yeah, you got to keep it on brand.
We had to pay homage.
Yeah, don't worry. If I add, like, you know, some kind of synthy 90s keyboard, it'll sound exactly like the original, I think.
Do you want to go first?
No, because I'm still thinking.
Okay. So I know I always go for horrible ones, but...
Because you're horrible.
Because I'm horrible. But the real eyeballs emerging from the scarecrow's straw face were quite a texture.
Yeah.
That was quite a thing.
Yeah, the jelly of the eye and the bristle of the straw.
The bristle of the straw, yeah.
I have got one, actually. The texture of Bird Boy, which is otherwise not a very good season 4 episode about a bird boy who has a good singing voice. But the costume of the bird boy just looks like it's festering. Like, it's the least majestic bird boy I could possibly imagine. So it's got, like, the colours of a kind of macaw parrot. But somehow, it looks really sort of scrappy. It looks kind of scabby, basically. Or like, it's sort of... got mushroom spores on it almost. But yeah, I just thought the costume looked really kind of rank. But season 4 otherwise isn't very good. Like, the characters definitely start to feel like caricatures themselves.
Like, Pete is just... Is it just only talking about how much he likes girls?
Yeah, like at any given opportunity. Like, do you want some breakfast, Pete? No, but what I'd really like is a girl. Yeah, to a degree that it starts being a bit weird.
Yeah.
So I think that's the only season 4 episode we really bothered. Yeah. But season 3 starts with a bang, with the big burp.
One of the most memorable episodes.
Yeah, it literally made me gag.
Oh, yeah, it's really quite horrible. I'm sorry. We don't need to go too much into it.
Well, Pete wees on a tree and thus impregnates the tree. Then spends most of the episode belching really grotesquely.
And because he's pregnant with the tree's baby.
And
he has to give birth through his mouth.
And then he gives birth through the mouth. And then there's a sort of horrible Little Otic styled tree baby with Pete's face superimposed onto it. And then did you notice the horrifying twist at the end?
Well, where Bronson goes to pee on a tree.
Yeah, and it's the same tree. It's the tree of the tree baby. So literally, at the end, Bronson's about to impregnate his brother's child through weeing on it.
It's twisted.
That's genuinely twisted. I mean, my sister's takeaway from the episode was that the message of it was that you can wee on whoever you want to wee on. And that wee is so magical.
He did wee on the tree for a very long time.
Oh yeah, it was a majestic wee. I like also that he sort of spews out this stuff after the pregnancy, and then one of the characters says, "Oh, just a bit of an after burp."
God, that was horrible. It looked like snot.
Yeah.
It looked like it was vomiting up snot. I mean, I did like how supportive everyone was of his pregnancy.
Yeah, that's true.
And I like the kind of gender oddness around when the tree spirit, who's a girl, is the father, there's reporters become interested and so they're asking Pete, like, who's the father, and Pete goes, oh, she's a tree, and And the reporter goes, the father's a she. Yeah.
and I guess the tree spirit then sort of plays up to this stereotype of the bad, uncaring father who you know, doesn't know if they want to be present at the giving birth.
Yeah. Eventually comes through.
There's a nice, I guess, Australian saying about to get someone pregnant, you drop a tadpole in their beer.
Ah, yeah, I love that. Yeah, that was Nell again. Nell's sort of explaining pregnancy to Bronson. And she goes, you know, if someone drops a tadpole in her beer.
from which arises quite a lot of awkward humour with Bronson saying that he's going to get Faye pregnant.
Yes. really awkward all round.
It was a very awkward episode. I was also going to tell, I should have been more like you and actually kept a tally, being proper. But I started trying to count up how many times characters say Bronson or Bronson.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of the catchphrase of the show, really.
Yeah. He's always doing something gross. Although it's not entirely limited to Bronson.
No.
Found out in this episode.
They live within a gross world.
Yeah.
So, was the last episode, do you want to talk about Toy Love?
Yes.
So, season 3, episode 9.
Going in on the classic horror tropes with a creepy doll.
And again, a Linda-centric episode. I think we watched a few kind of Linda-centered ones, which is good because she's probably the most interesting character out of the three kids.
Yeah, she's the one with the most, has a character.
Yeah.
I mean, Pete's this sort of fairly generic teenage boy, and Bronson likes gross things.
So it starts with the family twist, disposing themselves of lots of clutter from around the house.
Under Faye's instruction, because she's moving in, or she's just moved in to the lighthouse. They eventually end up just bringing almost everything that they've decided to chuck out back into the house, except for this Linda's old doll, Veronique, who has a pull string that says, cuddle me, when you pull it. So Linda rescues her Michael Jackson doll and takes that to bed with her, but Veronique is slighted by this and turns up in Linda's bedroom in the night, sort of scuttling around at the end of her bed
hiding about.
With her little cuddle me catchphrase. Which we don't see, but apparently she crawls towards Linda saying cuddle me, which is quite a horrifying image.
And Linda sort of starts out understandably very distressed by this, but becomes increasingly badassed over the course of the episode. To the point that at the end she's sort of delivering Arnold Schwarzenegger style catchphrases.
Yeah.
So near the end, she's sort of kicking down her bedroom door, and the doll goes, cuddle me, and she says, cuddle my stick.
Oh yeah. And it ends up being resolved quite similarly to Noel, in that she finds another inanimate companion for Veronique in her Michael Jackson doll, and they are satisfied to cuddle each other.
which I think is an ending that the real Michael Jackson would have appreciated. Mm. Like, I think Michael Jackson, if he watched this episode, probably really enjoyed it, which is nice.
For some reason, I'm glad you... Did you watch this with Phoebe?
Yeah.
Because I feel like this is something that Phoebe would have things to say about.
Oh, well, we certainly discussed whether we were going to watch it with baby Sophie.
Oh, okay, yeah, this is a baby Sophie thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but we decided not. I mean, I advised Phoebe to, say some kind words before bed to baby Sophie. as Phoebe's sort of creepy, maniacal doll when she was little, who she gave quite an odd personality to, that baby Sophie had lots of belief in her own magical abilities and claimed that she could control the weather.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's now comfortably in a basket in Phoebe's room, along with Imba the seal, who was my favourite cuddly toy as a kid.
Good, because we see what happens if you don't pay enough attention to them.
Yeah. I think it gets across its point in a more succinct way than Toy Story did.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, are there any other sort of episodes you wanted to mention?
That was all the ones I rewatched on this little outing. Yeah, I think we've mentioned some of the more outlandish ones, at least in passing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone who watched this as a kid will have their own, you know, particular episode that sticks in their mind. So,
yeah,
I say the one that always stayed with me is the one with the backwards remote control. It's a remote control that, like, click and control time, and there's a spaghetti eating contest, which hilariously is put in reverse to seriously grotesque effect.
Yeah. I think that was everything I had to say, except like to just put out an appeal that in case anyone wants to make a YouTube compilation of just the nail bits around the twist, because I would watch that
and base your aesthetic around it.
Yeah. I think maybe when I'm old, wear a lighthouse cap.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
And give dark warnings about various magical and haunted things to small children.
Right, the credits.
Our intro music's by Maki Yamazaki, our outro music's by Joe Kelly, our artwork's by Letty Wilson. I'll put their details in the show notes, and you can find us on Twitter at StillScaredPod, or email us at StillScaredPodcast@gmail.com.
My gosh, you've got slick at that.
Oh, thank you very much. Do you have a sign off?
Mm. Sleep well, creepy kids, without my pants.
See you later, creepy kids. Bye. Without my pants. Bye.
Well, that's funny every time.